Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right, we're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shotty, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys. So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the Home Buying Blueprint, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
Earners, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, that's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait, don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
He's like, you're going to learn that in life, sometimes having exposure to disadvantage is truly the advantage because most of us don't really know what we're doing. We just pretend to know. And so you just need to put yourself out there.
All right, guys. Welcome back.
We are back.
Earn Your Leisure. This is a very special episode. We're back home. And we got Aisha Bo. So this is a first of sorts. They always say like the smartest people. When I was a kid, they like when you're a rocket scientist.
Yeah, like take a rocket scientist to figure it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, maybe it does.
Well, we have a rocket scientist. So ex-NASA scientist and STEM board CEO and now is an entrepreneur. And she has a company called Lingo, where she teaches kids about STEM. It's recognized by Inc. 5000 as one of the fastest growing companies. Recently raised $2 million in your seed rounds, right? And you have a few other businesses as well. And it's a good conversation because started from struggling academically, community college, to literally being what is known as the smartest profession in the world. Can we mention the space thing?
Absolutely.
And then
it's definitely a first.
Yeah. So she's also the first African American woman astronaut with Blue Origin.
right?
Yep.
And that is a space program with NASA that's actually set to launch, I believe, in fall?
September.
Well, you got to mention the founder of Blue Origin, one of the guys that we may know, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, for sure. And so you're going to go out of space in September, one of the few people ever in the history of the world to go out of space. If you look at it, it's very few people in the history of the world that's actually going out of space. I believe you're one of the only, it's the only three black women have ever gone out of space, right?
I'll be the sixth.
Five. You're number six.
Be six.
So astronaut, rocket scientist, entrepreneur, STEM enthusiast, teacher, and relationship expert as well. We talked about
and
that.
Motivational speaker.
Motivational speaker. You have a book too, right?
Working on a book.
On the way.
So yeah, this is a lot to unpack. But first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right, and you're from DC, right? No, you're
Michigan.
From
no, Michigan. Ann Arbor. Michigan.
Ann Arbor, go Blue. Michigan.
Exactly.
I greeted you by saying go Blue.
Go Blue.
So congratulations to them. We are sorry for what happened to our Lions. But there's always next year. So congrats to the U.
Still hurts.
Of M.
But what we say about that, right? The moral of the story is when you're up, stay up. Don't stop working when you think you're ahead.
That's a fact.
Life lesson.
That's a fact. So let's get into this. We want to talk about the entrepreneurship, talking about space, talking about all of that stuff. But let's start at the beginning. So How do you actually go from struggling in high school to going to community college to becoming a rocket scientist at NASA? That seems like that's a track that somebody that is a genius early on in school, that has straight A's, that is advanced algebra. And what exactly is a rocket scientist anyway?
I think that what happens in life is that when you're growing up, you listen to what people around you say and you think they know, but oftentimes they're just guessing. They don't really know. And so at that point in time in my life, I wasn't focused on the books because there was a lot of other stuff going on at home. They were lucky if they saw me. And I was happy to occasionally be there, but I was focused on just making it through the day, not so much making the grades. And so what happened was I leave this high school environment after, you know, talking to guidance counselors and things. And so the famous kind of story here is that my high school guidance counselor suggested that I should be a cosmetologist. And that was like the first time that I actually felt mad. And there's really nothing against it. It was that was all that she thought I was capable of being. And I started asking myself, why do I think the way that I do about what's possible for me? Like, who really tested whether or not what people are telling me is true or not? So I end up in community college, not doing well the first semester, and I have this moment where it's like—
What was your GPA in high school?
2.313.
So that's like a C average, right?
Because
2.0 is a C average. 3.0 is a B average, right? 4.0 is an A average. So you'd be like a C, you're a C student.
Like a C student.
Yeah.
Like a, shout out to the C students.
Yeah,
C's get degrees.
The C students are running the companies the A students are working
that's a
for.
Fact.
C students run the world.
C students are running this company right now.
I have this paper at my house to this day as motivation. Literally, like, I look at it, I want to make it into Kleenex tissue so people could boo-hoo into it when they visit me. Because it really shows, like, it's not where you start, it's how you finish. And I still to this day don't know why we need to measure it to 3.13, but they did that. So 2.3 would have been fine.
So 2.3 GPA in high school, you go to community college and you just, all right. So what happens at community college?
So I like bomb the first semester. I think I'm going to be a business student, study economics. Econ had math in it. I didn't know how to study, didn't have any self-confidence. I find myself in my room. It's like dark, it's dramatic, it's everything. It's like, I just don't know what I'm going to do. And I have this thought, well, why do you think that you're not capable of anything great? Like, why do you get up every day and look at yourself and feel bad? Like, why do you allow that? And so I thought that I was gonna just do something crazy, like take out a piece of paper and make a dream list and escape to this fantasy land. But then I realized, like in the immortal words of Tupac, the dreams are real.
Rest in peace, Tupac.
Yeah, that's a fact.
So this list, which I, you know, to this day, I remember it was very short, very simple. I want to look at myself and feel good, right? I want to say my name and feel respected. I want to go to college. And if I go to college, I want to study something that is outrageous, that's impressive, that every single time I introduce myself, I'm going to feel proud to say. And I kind of put in rocket science because that's the thing, right? Like, that's like the unachievable dream. And so it was sort of like this hidden prayer.
A few other things, but.
But it was like this hidden prayer of like, well, look, if I put this in there, then like I will truly know that God is real. I will be good for the rest of my life. But that was the list.
So, okay. So you have this awakening after the first semester in junior college that you want to be a rocket scientist.
Yeah.
So then you start doing better in school, I'm assuming. Let's tell you. Like,
because I don't even feel like that. It almost seems like I want to do better, but sometimes I just may not have the capability. Had you always had the capability to be a great student, especially in mathematics, or was that something that you found after this moment, this epiphany in a sense?
So I think what I found was the courage to try. Because when I started telling people about my dream, they're all like, oh, no, you're crazy. That's never going to happen. Da, 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 da. Like, nobody was a fan. They literally thought that I had lost it. Mm-hmm. And so that actually allowed me the safe space to just focus in on myself and what I wanted to do. It was like a blessing in disguise. I just kind of got to go in stealth mode. And it wasn't an overnight success. It was as though I was consistently accomplishing small things that turned into bigger things. So while I transitioned out of community college to Michigan Aerospace, I think I failed every single class that first semester at Michigan Aero. But that's okay. I took the beating and was like, well, if I made it this far, I can continue to make it. And so I realized that there was no such thing really as failure. It was just more learning, right? Some of those lessons are going to hurt more than others, but if you can be informed by them, mm-hmm. then you can succeed. So like the second time, maybe I take that class and get a B. And that's what I committed to. I just committed to the process and to the long game. And over that, I got better and better until I got to the point where I was like, there isn't anything that I can't do that I can't come back from. I know what it's like to be broke. I know what it's like to be hungry. I know what it's like to have no hope. So what is it if I see a grade and perceive failure? No, take it again, do it again.
Mm-hmm. So you go from community college to Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you study at Michigan?
Aerospace engineering and space systems engineering.
From a financial standpoint, is that in your mind, right? Because you're thinking community college is going to cost me one thing. I'm going to the University of Michigan. This is going to be an expensive process. I have to make it, right? Like, failing classes is one thing in high school because it's like, yeah, you can do a summer school and do it. You fail in college, there's a price associated with that, and redoing it, there's a price associated with that. So how much did the financial impact of the decisions you were making have on you?
That's such a good question. You know, that first semester when I failed all those courses at Michigan, because that was real money, right? I was living off of like $300 a month, and some of those classes, $600 a credit hour. I literally took out a life insurance policy on myself so that if I died during college, my parents wouldn't have to pay that money back. Because I didn't come from people who could pay for college. And so here I am, I got in, I'm terrified, I'm failing classes, and all I can think about is how I don't want to stick somebody else with that debt.
It's a real thought. It's a real thought. So is that furthermore encouragement to say, I have to do this?
Yeah.
This is my path now, I've decided to go in, I have to make it. So when you fail, you're allowed to take, because sometimes you start failing courses and, you know, they call you into administration like, hey, this may not be for you. We may have to let you go from the school.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely had a few of those meetings, but I refused to commit to the idea that I couldn't do it. I was just like, no, right? Like, look, if I can go from being in high school and not doing so well to being in community college to being at this point, damn it, I'm gonna make it out. And between taking more classes than I probably should have so I could have gotten out sooner, which didn't necessarily help the stress. I think I lived on Red Bull and burritos for at least a year. Everything that I encountered just made me feel like when I leave this place, I want to rewrite the script on how people do this. Because you can and you will.
So by the time you graduated from Michigan, what was your GPA?
Oh, I nearly 4 points in my master's.
Huh? So you get it together, you graduate from college, right? Mm-hmm. Then you go to, you have a master's program that you go to.
Yeah.
Where is that at?
Also at Michigan.
So you stay in Michigan for your master's program.
Yeah.
What's the master's in?
So my master's is in space systems engineering with a focus on nanosatellites, like satellites the size of a shoebox.
So by that time, you're fully entrenched into the academic world and you're doing good.
Yes. But the cool part about this part was I transitioned from a program that was mostly theoretical to a program that was practical. Like, we were doing real things. We were building with our hands. And that type of learning I got. I'm not necessarily like a design an airplane on the back of a napkin person, but if you give me something and you tell me to make something, then I can do it. And that's when I really learned about the power of like learning styles. And like, if you don't learn something the first time, it's not because you can't learn it. It's that you may not have found the person that can teach it to you in the way that you learn.
Yeah, for sure. That's the problem with American school, and they only teach in one way.
Exactly.
So now you figured that out. You graduate from your master's program, Flying Colors.
Yes.
Can you say the degree again?
Space Systems Engineering.
Space Systems Engineering.
Yes.
So what happens after that?
So I have this amazing conversation, and I want to like shout out to all those people who see more than you than what's on paper. I'm getting ready to graduate, and I meet somebody who is running an engineering program at NASA in Silicon Valley. And it was my job to take him on a tour of the school, you know, do all those things you do when you're just trying to get out of college. And he says to me, "Hey, I think you should apply. I think you'd be really good for this job." And I was like, "Look, I understand that I'm doing well now, but I came from all of this, you know, all this background, and I'm not really sure that I can make it." And he looked me dead in the eye and he was like, "What you've been through counts for something, right?" He's like, "You're going to learn that in life, sometimes having exposure to disadvantage is truly the advantage, because most of us don't really know what we're doing. We just pretend to know. And so you just need to put yourself out there." I still didn't give him my resume. It's terrible. I should have done it the first time. But then he sent me an email the next week and he was like, "Look, I just need you to send me your resume so that I can round out my recruiting efforts at this school." And it was at that moment that I was like, why am I going to be another person that doubts me? There are so many other people who do that, who invest in doing that. I've just had someone tell me that everything that I overcame matters. Let me put myself out there. And that's how I ended up getting the internship. And then 6 years later, I was still there.
Prior to the internship at NASA, what was the goal, right? You have this degree, but like when you went to school, you had the idea, "I'm going to get this degree, but I'm going to be what?" What was it?
I don't know.
No, right?
I didn't know. Like, look, I literally had like, what, 3-4 goals, and I had accomplished them, and I was in school. Like, I don't know, because I didn't think anyone was going to hire me.
Yeah.
I mean, there isn't exactly a NASA in Michigan. I had never been, anywhere without my parents. I had no idea where I was going to go and what I was going to do. I just knew that I was going to have a degree, and I was told that people needed a degree.
So once you start, you get the internship at NASA, and then you get a permanent job at NASA.
Mm-hmm.
And then that job is what, scientist job?
I was working as a mission engineer for the small spacecraft division.
Okay.
See, because I get there, I have a badge. I'm supposed to be there. I'm looking around and I'm like, this is dope. I love everything about it. And I start asking questions in meetings and I'm like, I spent all this time questioning myself when I should have been questioning you. Because you get into these rooms and it's the same style of thinking over and over and over again. And the questions I'm having are being welcomed and the things I'm working on are making progress. And I'm like, oh no, you need me. Now I have confidence. Now I'm going to stay here. And so I transitioned from that internship into that job.
So what were you doing as your job? What's your job details?
Job was fun. The first couple of years, we were working on small spacecraft, and our objective was to build car seats for nanosats, because you want to make sure that your satellite gets there safely on that bumpy ride out of the atmosphere. That was fun. I got to travel around. I got to meet a lot of interesting people and stand up some small, now large, space companies. The next opportunity I had was working on commercial aviation. So, you know, when you fly to point A, from point A to point B, you ever wonder how you might have left late but got there on time? That's because we optimize the trajectories for different situations when you're going through the neighborhood. So NASA, FAA, private research all get together to make sure that you can fly safely and efficiently. And so my publications are on flight trajectory optimization for the commercial airspace.
So what exactly does that mean? That means that you are taking a left when you should have been taking a right so you can get there quicker?
It means you get a shortcut.
You're taking a shortcut.
You're taking a shortcut.
So you mapped out the roadmap in the sky to see what the most efficient way of travel is.
Yes. So that means a big effort, right? We got a lot of players on the team, but that was essentially what all of my research was on and looking at when you're getting these shortcuts, how do you minimize the fuel burns so you can reduce emissions?
So you're doing the emissions? Are you like studying wind patterns and all this too, right?
Mostly maneuvers.
Okay.
Like what kind of maneuvers can you give the pilots so that they can, you know, shorten the route and maybe reduce the speed from at certain points so that you can fly more efficiently?
So how's the process of doing that? What do you have to study to know that information?
So that comes down to radar locations, right? Kind of like where all the points are, what air traffic control is doing, how much traffic is there. And then, like you said, weather, things of that nature. I mean, we were really looking at large scale simulations and then putting forth ideas about, well, if we make it a little bit more efficient here, then that's going to mean this there.
So this is an executive position?
No.
It feels like it.
No, I'm a worker bee.
So it sounds really important, right?
Yes, like
this
but I
is
was
a very
worker bee.
This is a very important position, especially when you're talking about commercial airlines. How much is somebody in this space making at the position that you were at the time?
Oh my goodness. I remember it was literally like 100,000 and 1 cent. Like literally 100,000 was because I was obsessed with this idea of making six figures, right? And mm-hmm. So every single year I kept a list of every single thing that I would do. And so this is like a little bit of like a work suggestion, right? I would take what the organization's objectives were. I would look at what I was doing and I would break out, okay, I went to this seminar, this supports this professional development goal. I went to this thing in the community that supports this goal. And I would have the receipts. And so whenever my supervisor went to review me, I'm like, well, this is what I did. This is how many people I impacted. This is how much time I spent. And then here are all my publications, all my conferences. How could you not mark me exceptional? Because I wanted those promotions.
Mm.
So, and then that's the last job that you had at NASA? Or you had another job?
That was the last job I had at NASA.
And what made you leave NASA?
I was going into the community and I was talking to kids. And I was so excited to talk about the work that I had worked so hard to be able to represent. And all they wanted to do was talk about who I was and how I got there. And I realized that there was a gap because those students were like, wait a second, you mean this wasn't what you always wanted to do? You mean you didn't know how you're going to pay for college, but you did it? And oh, by the way, you're wearing a pink blazer and you're wearing makeup? How does all this fit together? And after going to school after school, I was like, there's a real disconnect here, right? Like, I can't go into these classrooms and have the kids looking at me like I'm an alien. I want to normalize this. So how do I create a way to found a business that helps people realize that they can do this too?
So you started a business.
I had the idea. And I say it that way because, once again, I didn't have successful family members that I could go to for money or people that thought that my idea was going to be anything. And so I started the idea and it took me 2 years from having that idea to actually getting enough traction to transition from my job to run the idea full time.
What was that transition like? You said that you were the worker bee, but now you're the entrepreneur. We spoke to Robert Smith, who comes from engineering.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was one of those things for him as well. It was, all right, I'm an engineer by trade, but now I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a CEO. What were you going through during those 2 years? What were you trying to figure out? Who were you leaning on to figure out, how do I navigate this new space that I'm in? I'm already a rocket scientist, but an entrepreneur, this is new.
Yeah, well, one of the things that happened was I realized how expensive it was to be knowledge poor, right? And I had given up the lease on my apartment, which now all the way my parents are like, what? Like what? Like my mom was just like, there's just you mean you're giving up your job as a Nazarite like to for this business? And I'm like, I'm going to be bigger than this business. You just don't know. And so I got up an hour earlier and an hour later, and I started reading about successful people. And one of the things that I noticed was a lot of people had the destination in mind, but they had no idea how they were actually going to get to that point. It was just a series of things that happened that may have looked fortuitous, but was really the universe and their environment reacting to their desire to get to where they wanted to go. And so I'm meeting people, I'm making connections, I'm going to meetups, I'm, you know, hiring consultants and trying things, and just a lot of failure. And all of this led me to finding mentors who I think they just recognize the desire to figure it out and were willing to provide a little bit more guidance to take me the rest of the way.
So what's the first company that you started?
Stemboard.
So talk about that and, you know, challenges and the idea and the vision behind that.
Started Stemboard a decade ago. We are an 8-figure business, and I've got nearly 50 people working for me full time in several states. I started that business literally with a dollar and a dream, and it took maybe, I would say, 3 to 4 years before I really started to see the revenue that validated that business. And this is why I think, especially for minority entrepreneurs, it is so expensive to be broke. If you can take the time and you can do your side hustle and let that side hustle build while you have a job, I highly recommend it, because all the money I used to spend trying to figure it out, going to conferences that I didn't need to invest in, hiring people that I didn't know what I was looking for in a hire, I didn't have to worry about that as much because I still had a job. When I transitioned out of the job, all those gambles on talent and decisions just became more weighty. But we are an engineering firm. We support government clients, mostly large clients. And we've actually been recognized not only by Inc. 5000 twice as one of the fastest growing companies in America, but by the Small Business Administration and by the Department of Defense as one of the premier contractors.
So you do consulting work for, what exactly did your company do?
So we provide engineering expertise in data science, data analytics, and enterprise IT modernization, which can sound like a lot of words, but basically we provide very good engineering advice when it comes to data.
So consulting. Yeah.
Yes.
So you make systems for these large companies to make their businesses run easier.
Yes.
So you don't actually do the engineering work, you just consult about the
engineering. We actually do the engineering work.
Okay.
Yeah, so my team is all engineers. So we not only consult, but we also implement.
Okay.
So,
so you have an engineering firm.
Yes.
Pretty. So who is the, do you start small businesses and lead to large enterprises? Did you have connections being in Silicon Valley with NASA? Did you rely on those resources to help you as get your first clients?
So let me frame it this way.
Okay.
When I was an engineer and I was a worker bee, I'd have to go out, I have to talk to a whole bunch of people. And one of the pieces of advice that I give is a lot of the people who have already hired you can be some of your first clients. And so I essentially, where I could, right, went back and said, hey, I'm in business on my own now. Are there opportunities for you either to come on as an employee or for you to support me?
And how'd that go?
It went well. It went really well. There are a lot of people who I worked with who were like, well, I know what your reputation was when you were at NASA, and that's what attracted us to work with you now.
So, okay, so you get that up and running, and then the next business that you start is the STEM business?
It is.
So, talk about that.
I'm looking at Stemboard, I'm saying to myself, we are going out there and we had this mission of a portion of revenue every year was going to be reinvested back into the community, because I wanted to, from the ground up, build a talent pipeline. That was my mission when I came out of NASA. I want to see people and tell them my story, and I want to own the highlights and the lowlights so that students know that they can build their own businesses, that they can change the future of their community. And that allowed us as a company to say, we're going to take, you know, minimum 10% of the revenue that we generate, and we're going to build our own educational programs. And we're going to go into inner cities, Baltimore, Atlanta, St. Louis, all these areas, and we're going to donate our time. And we're going to work alongside these kids, and we're going to help them build companies. We're going to help them apply for college. I mean, this is stuff that we've been doing for the entirety of the foundation of the company. And it ended up becoming such a needed thing that it grew into its own company on its own. And I, you know, as somebody who never thought that they were going to be an engineer, right? I didn't decide to do this until I was 18. And my academic journey didn't really start to get good until I was building with my hand and I could learn that, like, that fire, that passion that I had for hustle really could translate to dollars. I wanted to bring that to kids where they were. And that's what Lingo is. We spun it out, we grew it. And in the last 2 years, we've been put in the hands of nearly 10,000 students. And one of my favorite things is we support Upward Bound. We're taught in schools. You know, we've got everything from Princeton Day School as a client to Albany State University in Georgia, right? We've got HBCUs, we've got PWIs, we have it all. And that to me is what I truly feel is a legacy, because I don't need you to become an aerospace engineer, but I do need you to be successful. And I need you to understand that you may not need a 4-year degree to be successful. All you need is confidence in yourself and a little bit of know-how and the ability to learn things on the internet, and you can make a lot of things in life happen.
How involved are y'all with the selection of the students in the schools? Because STEM has been something that has been pushed for the past, I'd say, 10 to 15 years inside of schools. For those not at STEM, is science, technology, engineering, and math. But it seems like, especially in the schools I've been in, the STEM kids are the brightest kids based on their grades, right? So technically, if that was the case, then at the time, you wouldn't even been inside the program.
Right.
So how are you making sure that it's curated from kids with all academic prowess?
Yeah, so let me tell you a little bit about how we architected the program. Mm-hmm. My head of the business who runs education, he's the only person that I know who had a lower high school GPA than me. He had a 1.8, became a PhD in nuclear science, the only Black man to do it in the entire country the year that he did it, right? We all got together as an executive team. We said, how do we design this for people who don't have parents that can help them with their homework and people who don't have teachers that have the training to help them execute it?
Right.
So first thing was, all of our lessons are online self-paced modules. We're teaching you, the kids. The other thing was, we aligned it to national learning standards so we can be taught as part of, you know, next generation science standards or CSTA K-12, which the importance for that is a lot of the schools are under pressure to teach the standard. Well, now you can introduce our box as part of that standard. And the other thing is, we specifically go to areas that need our help. Our idea is to be capacity building. So we want to develop the content and we want to train the teachers. And that's where we spend our time, empowering educators. I spent time teaching eighth grade in East St. Louis. Loved it. Loved it. We'll be back there again this year. And I've had students. So one of my favorite lessons is what we call trap lingo, where we teach the kids that music is really like voltage drops, right? And we had the kids code their favorite songs. And so all of a sudden you have Meg on a microcontroller and the kids don't want to leave the class. And that kid's telling me that he wants to be a producer and he wants to make music. And the parents coming in and saying, I have never had to come into the school other than to take my kid after bad behavior. And now he's telling me to come in and tell and see what he built that day because he's proud of it. That is what we do. And when you look at education, and you guys know this well, there are very few things in the school district that are actually made by us or made by an American company. And like, that's what I want to contribute, right? For me, the legacy is the story, the idea that you can be anything and you can build anything.
So you have a STEM program that you have offerings through different school districts, and you can purchase it as a parent as well?
You can. So you can go direct online and you can buy from us. But what I like to do is get corporations to pay for the kits. So our whole strategy is to work with big corporations and they then donate it to the schools. Like, we just worked with Wells Fargo to have them donate about $25,000 worth of product to a school in New Orleans. Mm. That's how we operate, because I don't want you as a student to have to pay for that. I want you to get that for free.
Right. That makes sense. It's like a company like Amazon can come in, buy it, give it to a school district.
Yep.
And it's an online program.
So it's two parts. They get the box that they can build with at home. The box has a board that's open source. So you don't have to just do our lessons. You can do any lesson that's an Arduino based online, which is why people really like it, right? You buy something a lot of times and you get trapped into just what they made. You can do our stuff. You can do other lessons. You do that at home. Our lesson box supports at least 8 lessons. So you go online, you get a class, you like it, great, do another one. So it's a mixture of building at home with your hands and being educated online.
So this is, it sounds like it's an activity-based model.
Yes.
Or a project-based model.
Yep.
That was
We're
the
a project-based learning model.
Well,
yes.
There it is.
With ARC 5 motivation.
There you go. So, I know the lingo.
So the whole point of STEM is to get kids obviously more into science and technology and engineering and math. With the career path of what, being a computer programmer, coder, an engineer, like what's the career path?
So I like to look at this a little bit differently because I think that all careers now are STEM careers. So I don't even think about it as you have to be interested in science and math. I look at it as, do you have 21st century skills? Like, can you interact with the environment around you? Like, this microphone is hardware, this phone is hardware, this camera is hardware. So what I want is for students to feel empowered to know that they can participate in this economy by being able to build, and that they can create startups, and that they can raise money, and that they can try to be entrepreneurs on their own. That's really what I'm after.
So is this domestic, or does this have a global international feel to it, right? Because I feel like the brightest minds are everywhere. Right. So you need to pick from the entire globe. So how did you guys go about doing that?
So I've had the honor of being invited to keynote in a dozen countries. I'm a U.S. State Department global speaker. And there was this trip that I went on to South Africa, and it just changed my life. I was at a school called Bainesville, and this girl, we're a cafeteria. They don't even have an auditorium. Right. This little girl, she's maybe like 4'5", stands up and says, "I'm really inspired by your story, but you need to go back and you need to make something that the world can learn from. And you can give us a book, but it's better if you make something that teaches a skill." Lingo was created as an independent business a year and a half from that trip. And we now have been used in nearly all of those keynotes as an English language technical teaching tool, because you don't even have to know English to complete Lingo. We color coded it. So I did a workshop in Bishkek in Kyrgyzstan, and the students were able to finish their kit, even though we had to have a translator help us talk to each other. And like, that's the power of this box. And like, that's really what I want to give to the world. I want to give the world hope and inspiration, because if they can see me and Black women teaching them how to code online, they know that they can do that. And pretty much everywhere, people are looking for the playbook for success.
So as far as artificial intelligence, is that part of the program? And you guys are using artificial intelligence at NASA?
That was, so when I was at NASA, there was research on it, but that wasn't necessarily in our area, in satellites. Now we're definitely employing that with like machine learning algorithms and even some of the stuff that we're doing with Lingo, right? Creating custom learning paths, right? Having being able to log in to your account and have somebody that greets you and is like your Lingo bot. That's really where I think things are going. But AI predated my career at NASA.
All right, technology, that's important, right? Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But science, engineering, and math, how important is that for the average person?
I mean, I think it's really important, but I think it's all about like bringing it into perspective, right? Like if somebody didn't have a decent concept of math or forces, that chair wasn't going to hold you up. Same thing with technology, microphone. I mean, some of the most amazing things are electronics. Like the quality, it's insane. I mean, I think there's just like a lot of really, really practical things that people don't necessarily associate with STEM subjects that when you make them accessible, it becomes relatable and thereby more interesting.
And it helps you think better too, right?
Absolutely. Like look, I'm a serial plant killer. I tell anybody who wants to know, I kill plants. And I took this complaint into a meeting that I had with my team. And the team was like, well, we can make a temperature and humidity sensor so you know if that plant is thirsty. I'm like, bet, bring it. And one of the activities that we have now was plant health. And so to be able to now go, I can have a relationship with my plant and I can build a sensor that goes into my plant to make sure that my plant is healthy. And that's STEM, yes. But now you've just taken that field and you've made it accessible. And who knows what that person is going to create because they just built a sensor for them to talk to the plant in their house.
You got to talk to your plants. That's a fact. That's a fact. My mom has had the same plant for over 27 years.
Really?
Yeah, it's upstairs. I'll show you after this. But she talks, she knows, but that's natural. She knows, but to have a sensor, that makes it a lot easier. In order to get the box off the ground, is this where you raise capital?
Yes.
To start Lingo? So, I mean, we know the statistics. We hear about it, the percentages that minority founders, you know, are able to have access to. What was that like for you, obviously, being a minority, being a woman founder? Talk about that.
I really liked being an outsider in the sense. It was similar to when I decided to start the business from NASA. At first, people were telling me, hey, you've got to go with a pitch deck, go to the Valley, go to VCs. But the VCs weren't trying to rock with me. They didn't think that there was a market for what I was looking to do. Business has been around for 10 years. You're wrong, right? So one of the things that I like to say is stop taking advice from people who haven't done what you're trying to do. With Lingo, I'm like, I don't think I want to raise venture capital. I know what the stats are. They're terrible. How do I look at the model and how do I flip the model on its head? Because that's what I do. And when I looked at it, I said, VCs get their money from family offices. Why don't I try to hit up a couple of family offices? Now, I know why people don't typically hit up family offices, but I was determined once again to try and I had the time. And oh, by the way, I had the patience because I'm already running a business that's successful that I've had for 10 years. So let's try to figure this out. So I made a list of family offices who were in businesses that I thought that could be strategic investors. And the gamble that I made was, well, if I can get a multi-billion dollar family who has the right investment mindset and is willing to support me and understands the long term of what I'm looking to do, can I also bring in traditional capital? And the answer was yes. So I did a founder-led seed round where I brought in $1.5 million from a family office. And then I went to the other VCs and said, do you want to play?
And how'd that work out?
It worked out well because if I've already brought in $1.5 million and you're going to chip in $100,000, that $1.5 million is going to help your $100,000. So I basically de-risked the round for you. And that's one of the areas that I've been big on telling other minorities to pursue was what I call friendly patient capital. I call my investors like they're my dad. I'm like, hey, what are you guys doing? Here's what I'm working on. And part of the things that were not, non-negotiable for this family was that you were going to do good and you are going to do well, right? It's not just the dollar, it's about the legacy. And so when I tell them that kids in Ghana are doing our kits, have the video, love it, they're like, that's what you're supposed to do, right? Go out and make that impact. Whereas some people who have, you know, domestic VCs are not necessarily as lucky to have people who think in that way.
So, okay, so you raise the money. That helps you with infrastructure and employees, I'm assuming. So are you raising more money? What's the goal?
Yes.
There's more.
What's the...
You can definitely hit me up if you want to send a check. I accept check.
New round.
How much are you trying to raise?
I would like to raise about $1 million more and plot a path to our Series A, and I'll tell you why. Some of our clients are big firms. Talking Siemens, General Dynamics. General Dynamics has been a customer of ours for the last 3 years. Microsoft buys from us, right? We have big companies who have engineers who buy from us.
What do they buy the software?
They buy the kits.
So they can teach their employees?
They have their employees go into the schools or they provide it as capacity building for the schools that they sponsor. And as I started to do this, we started talking to school districts. Shout out to Syracuse School District. And I'm realizing that this mission and this need is even bigger than I knew. Like when I thought about it, I was like, oh, we're just going to ship out some kits. but it's really become about how can we help make a district better? And that is a problem of a much larger magnitude, and it takes more time. And we're also now building custom kits. Like, we're about to drop 3 whole space lessons. We got a climate satellite. We got a buggy coming out. That buggy's a moon rover. And we also have a rocket launch. And in building out all this content, I'm like, you know what, Bo? We need to take a little bit more capital, take our time, and really do something that is going to move the needle.
How many lessons are inside these kits? Because I'm thinking, and this was in elementary, middle school, and obviously high school, probably different, but it felt like they were just for semesters. And so there was a semester worth of lessons, and there was a new set of kids, so 4 semesters, 4 groups of kids in a grade every year. How many lessons are inside of your kits right now?
So it depends on what you want. And this is the beauty of it, because we designed this to be flexible. You can have 2 to 3 semesters worth in your kit if you want. It's all about what you ask us for. Like, so we developed content for every lesson for the classroom. And you could teach that over a semester, you could teach it over 2.
So school districts aren't really buying it for you for the most part. It's corporations that's buying it.
It's mostly been corporations. If you're out in the district, hit me up. I mean, I think the challenge, right, is there's a lot going on in the district environment. And we've got some good connections and we're making progress, but this is where I'm not ashamed to say I need help. The people who purchase from us, they love us, but I started to realize what we were really up against when it comes to like ads and marketing and all of that stuff. And that's really why I was like, I got to go back to the drawing board and raise more money, because I did not know how expensive it was to really advertise and reach some of these people.
Is it a price point issue? Because I feel like schools waste so much money on some of the most ridiculous things, and they do it repetitively every single year. Yeah. And so when you're approaching schools or school districts, are they saying, well, it's the price point, or we don't have it in the budget this year? Like, what is the resistance you feel? Because every school has STEM. So I'm just trying to figure out what would be the resistance.
So we actually do not see resistance once we get in front of the right person.
Okay.
What I see is the amount of money that I have to invest to have somebody reach out, form the relationship, do the presentation, put the proposal in front of whoever has to make the decision, close the deal, and then get paid can be roughly 6 to 8 months. And that's really where we have to support the operation until they can close the deal. And so the challenge in my mind is, how can we do more of these deals and shorten the time?
So what's the ultimate vision for the company?
My vision for Lingo would be to not only be a global provider of immersive STEM experiences, like I would like to get to the point where some of our boxes interact with Oculus, but to combine that with the entrepreneurship thing. Because when I teach the Lingo box in the Bahamas, and I've had this camp for nearly 10 years, I couple it with entrepreneurship, and then I give kids money to go out and try to run their business, because I believe that you don't have to have a college degree to be a multimillionaire. You just need to have entrepreneurship skills. And it's like a muscle. The more that you exercise it, the stronger that you're going to get. So I want students trying to build their first startup when they're 12 or they're 13, because by the time they're 20, they're going to be beasts.
So how was it for you to be go from being an employee to being an entrepreneur?
You know, I feel like my strength in this situation is knowing that there's so much that I don't know. Like, when I was an employee, when I would go to work every day, all I wanted to do was be respected for the things that I know. And as a entrepreneur, all I want to do is go out and speak to people and tell them that I don't know, right? So that I can be made better by the things that they know. That is my goal. Just be able to listen and support and have people improve the things that I create.
That's not on a personal level as the entrepreneur, but you're also the CEO.
Yeah.
And so there's people that are relying on you for their leadership. So walking into that role, how's the dynamics been for you?
You know, like, I shifted when he asked me that question, because the question really strikes at home, because I spent so many years as a woman professional just wanting to be seen as being good enough. And when I let go of that, I realized that my strength is being authentic and being empathetic. And when I took a step back, I was crowding out the son because I was trying to always lead and be strong and all this other stuff. And so when I said to the team for both businesses, hey, I want to make space for you to bring your gifts, that's really when I started to see exponential growth. So I have this concept of 80-20. You hire somebody 80% for the things on their resume that you know that they can, do, and the 20% that they could bring to the table that you haven't discovered yet. And you cultivate that person, and they will take you to places that you never knew that you would go.
So let's talk about going to space. So what is the program that you're going out of space? How did you get involved in that? And are you just going up, coming back down? Is there observation that you're going to be doing when you're up? Like, what's happening with that situation?
So I'm going to be flying to space on the New Shepard vehicle with Blue Origin. We will be coming up and we will be coming back down. And I'm excited about
that. How long will you be out of space?
The total trip, so the round trip is roughly, I don't know, less than an hour, and it's about 10 minutes of microgravity.
10 minutes out of space?
Yes.
So now, 25, like 20 minutes coming up, 10 minutes out of space, then 20 minutes come back down.
I think so, and I think we got to fix our hair before we can get out. So there's some time there.
Sure.
But look, so I will be the first to tell you that I never thought that I was going to be leaving the Earth's atmosphere. I don't even like turbulence on commercial flights. And so for me, this is a try it before you buy it situation where I get to try space in a controlled scenario. Once I started working at NASA and meeting amazing astronauts, I never thought that I could be them. And this is what I like about life and karma in the world is like, right when you think that you can't be something, life will show you that you can. And I said to myself many years ago, one of these years, I'm going to apply to be a NASA astronaut. I'm going to go to the International Space Station. And somehow I managed not to do it for year after year after year. And all of a sudden, I have the opportunity to be a Blue Origin astronaut. And my goal is to complete this. And if I like it, which I'm probably going to love it, I'm going to turn around. I'm going to apply to be a NASA astronaut.
What's the preparation like for this? I remember maybe it was last year they had Michael Strahan, and yep. He was going through it. He had to take some time off from Good Morning America. What do you have to do? What are they putting you through to get you prepared for this moment?
So they have a training program in their facility in Van Horn, Texas, that's mandatory. But in addition to that, you can do a host of other things. And so I'm going to be participating in a microgravity flight. I'm looking to fly on a fighter flight with the jets, like real fast. I like to go fast. I'm looking to do a high altitude skydive. And then in addition to that, for me, this is about bringing it home, right? There are so many people in my family are like, what is NASA doing for me? What's space doing for me? Like, why does any of this matter? And so I've been reaching out to organizations, HBCUs and high schools so that I can either fly a patch for school or do experiments. Like, I would like to partner with an HBCU and do an experiment on orbit, right? Or fly a sensor. I really want the outcome of this to not be, oh, you know, like that's like 10 minutes. I want it to be, this was something that made me believe or inspired someone to believe that they could reach for the stars and realize that it was only the beginning.
Does this take this flight, I know it's expensive. So were you chosen? Like, did you have to apply to become one of the Blue Origin astronauts? Or was there a sponsored event like, okay, this is the person we're putting forth as our choice?
Yeah, it's really cool. I got a call out of the blue from this lady named Nancy Conrad. And it just so happens that first day when I was at NASA, when I had a badge and I was excited to be there, I met Nancy. Nancy is the wife of Pete Conrad, who's an Apollo astronaut. I remember seeing her and being like, wow, like one day I hope to speak with her. Fast forward, right, over a decade, she's calling me. And she's like, look, there's this mission coming up. I think you'd be a really, really good fit. How about you apply? This time I didn't say no. I put my application forward, and it happened to work out that I was in the position to join the crew. Now, back to the money thing. Even if I had it, I don't know if I'd want to spend it. And the reason for that is there's a lot of support for space and for science, right? And like, good old African proverb, it's like, if you want to go, you know, fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So I went out to sponsors and I said, look, I want to know if you're going to back me on this flight. And they have. And so I'm getting ready to announce some significant brand partnerships, but we really are going to challenge the way that people look at going to space. And I'm excited to have amazing brands behind me to do it.
So what is the purpose of going to space? You work for NASA. You work for NASA, an organization that's devoted for space. Mm-hmm. Some people debate if we ever actually got to the moon, the conspiracy theorists out there. Mm. But even if we did get to the moon, what really happened? Like, why was the purpose of going to the moon? When you really think about it, right?
They're trying to leave us.
We went to the moon 60 years ago. I get it. It was a race against the Russians, and we put the American flag on the moon. Very typical of America. But when you really think about it, what's the point?
But I'm like, those same people love their satellite TV and their GPS, right?
So that's the point.
I mean, space for the benefit of Earth is really the theme, and it's the theme of, you know, Blue Origin. And what happens is there's all this amazing research that's done in space. Your memory foam mattress, space. Mm-hmm. There's all this stuff that comes out of that, but people don't know that it came from space, and so they don't associate it with space.
So I'm giving you the platform to educate people, including myself, on the benefits of spending trillions of dollars over the last 50 years of going to space. Like, this is your open platform to educate the world on the benefits of American tax dollars being spent to go to space.
So one of the things that I really enjoyed about working on space missions was it helped me understand how much research is done in order to help humans fight diseases and infections that wouldn't be possible without space. And so one thing that happens is if something is launched into space, it tends to mutate and it's called virulent. And so you see researchers working with pharmaceutical companies to introduce new antibiotics and new treatments that if you can kill it in space, you can kill it on Earth. And so that directly relates to our ability to just go outside, right? To be able to interact. And I'm not talking about vaccines. I'm talking about basic things that allow us to be able to better protect people. In addition to that, technology, right? When we look at the artificial heart valve, there are so many things that are small that benefit people day to day. And then beyond that, you know, climate and the world, like the world is becoming an ever smaller place. And a lot of what we know about climate change came from studies from space. And the impact on that is far reaching. And so when, you know, when people ask me about space, I'm just like, it's not so much about the moon and all of the dollars that are spent. The dollars that are spent are actually spent in the hopes of spending less dollars, right? If you build something the first time, it's typically more expensive, but if you repeat it, it becomes cheaper. That's why you get these large price tags. But the ability to be able to say people in 50 years aren't going to die from cancer, that's really what we're after when we look at space.
It's a lot. There's a lot going on up there, especially when you think about technology. You talked about satellites. We've been following the Starlink and all that. But also the debris that's up there is an issue.
That's a job. That's a startup.
You just
gave somebody a $1 billion idea right there.
Well, they have a startup already that's doing that.
Well, you want to elaborate on that? Because that's something
that's an issue.
That's a real issue.
No, that's definitely an issue. But this is why I love it, because it sounds super sci-fi, right? Like, why don't you create a space trash company? Go right ahead. But there's a lot of debris in space. And I mean, once again, space is a large place, but there's no shortage of jobs, startups, opportunity for people to pursue in space.
Is there like a race to Mars? Is that where we're headed with this? Like, I'm looking
at... We already got to Mars.
Well, like humans. We haven't been to Mars.
Rovers.
Well, humans I'm talking about. Is there a race, right? Because I'm looking...
Have humans been to Mars?
They have not.
That you can say publicly.
Stop. Like, here we go. So from a standpoint of, like, we're watching the wealthiest people in the world explore space exploration, whether it's Elon or Jeff Bezos, like we said before, Is that the race? Is that where this is headed?
I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say that was where it was headed. I mean, I think, like, when I look over, I don't know, the last 30 years, what's amazing is this idea that you now have a private industry that can contribute to something that used to only be the domain of governments. And I feel like that's the takeaway. Mm-hmm. And when we throw out Bezos and Branson and Elon, why can't we have the black version or the Hispanic version, right? Like, why not somebody else who is not like them? Because a lot of their money came from entrepreneurship and startups, and then they decided to go and pursue space because that was a passion. So for me, it's sort of like, we have this model, there are these guys, and I want it to be like Bezos, Branson, Bo.
It's right in line. What do you say to the flat earthers?
You like satellite TV, right? That's it. That's my whole response. I'm like, don't come for me on Twitter. Don't come for me in the DMs. Like, there are a lot of things that people rely on every day that requires there to be a rotation of that thing. If you think that your satellite just goes left to right and left to right again, I can't help you.
That's a good answer.
So are people in Australia...
when you said it, I'm like...
Are people in Australia standing upside down?
We're always standing right side up.
We're always...
Gravity, standing. Rotation.
The axis of the earth.
Yes.
So the southern hemisphere, if we're standing right side up, the world, the northern hemisphere, the southern hemisphere...
But they're right side up for where they are.
The gravity allows us to...
That's a legitimate question. Look, I read a lot of these conspiracy theory situations, so...
So you know what's funny about conspiracy is, like, sometimes conspiracy is a name for, like, whistleblower, right? And, like, you're really getting the drop. But then sometimes it's just weird news.
What about aliens?
That's an interesting question.
Are you allowed to answer that?
Well, I'll just look at it from a probabilistic standpoint, right? Because who's to say that we're not the aliens?
Well, we are aliens. If there's other life form,
well, right,
we'll be the aliens to them.
So this is why I need people to get involved in the STEM fields. Like, you too could be responding to questions like this at work, on the clock, on your job.
So do you think that they're aliens? You would think that they are.
So I think that when I first logged into ChatGPT, my very first query was, return to me all of the most reputable sightings of UFOs in history.
Really?
Do it. It's a great search. There's a lot of really good stuff. And the reason for that is I'm committed that I don't know what I don't know. And from a math perspective, if you've ever seen the sunset in Africa, which I know you guys have, and you see how many stars out there, mm-hmm, it's hard to believe that there isn't something else. Now, what is that else? Is that else a dog on another planet? Is it a plant? I don't know.
Is it an organism?
Who knows?
Just right? Squirming around.
I mean, but I think that we should inspire people to figure it out. Like, I belong in the camp of let's figure it out.
So there's a high probability that there's other life forms outside of Earth.
There's a Drake equation, and the Drake equation says that probability is one. Therefore, it is most likely possible.
The Drake equation?
The Drake equation.
Like the rapper Drake?
He can take credit for that. But it's not that Drake.
Oh, it's like an actual...
No.
No, it's literally No, it's just his name.
The scientist.
The scientist.
Yes.
Yeah. Drake.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Wait, well, that's a lot. Well, let's talk about your next move.
Okay.
For all pun intended. How did that come about? How's it going? Is it still happening? You know, you're a host on Inc. Your next move. So let's talk about that.
I'm really excited about it because I get to travel around. I get to talk to entrepreneurs. Like, I get to be asking the questions as opposed to answering the questions, which is always a really good position to be. We shot the first episode in Atlanta. I'm very excited about the guest. I don't know if you've met her. Her name is Brianna Arps. She has a perfume named Mudo, and she was one of the recipients of a grant from Pharrell's Black Ambition, which I thought was just an awesome way to open the season for me, for them, for everybody, because she talks about funding through grants, and she lists out grant sources. So if you haven't seen her, if you haven't caught that, I really want people to catch the free knowledge and the free money. that comes out of that. We also will be traveling around. So I've committed to 12 episodes, some of which will happen at South by Southwest. I haven't been to South by Southwest.
Really?
I know, but it's really hard to make the case to be there as an engineering company, like an aerospace engineering company, small one. My team just thinks I'm out like having fun. I'm like, no, I'm really working.
Texas, the home of aerospace. Makes too much sense.
But they see me at South by West and they're just like, she just having fun. But this year I get to go and actually be hosting, but I'm really excited to be able to support Inc. in highlighting some of these stories and, you know, bringing maybe a different perspective to the conversation, not only as a minority female, but as a founder. I just think we think about things differently because of lack of resources.
So, okay. Let's talk about relationships.
Ooh.
You had mentioned off camera your philosophy on relationships. And you have a similar conversation that a lot of guests have had as far as like successful Black women, where sometimes in today's society, it can be a detriment to a relationship or dating life the more successful you are, right?
To who?
Well, that's...
But I think that's what we need to like dig in and explore, right? And I'm going to light up around this conversation because there are no shortage of men in my DMs. Now, they may not be Black men, but there are plenty of men in my DMs. And people think that I don't date successful men. Like, no, we're both CEOs. And...
But that's the narrative that you... So talk about what you were talking about to us off camera.
So I think one of the things that happens, I think, is a disservice is I know all these brilliant, talented, successful women who may be being told by society that for some reason they're less attractive. Heck, I've gotten it. I've gone to my own family barbecues. My great aunt has said, honey, it don't matter if he's a felony, take him anyway. And I'm like, that is not
a felony.
If he has a
legendary,
if he's a felony.
If he's a felony.
Yeah, I mean, his
presence alone.
Yeah, she just wants a grandbaby, whatever.
Bring it home.
So she's saying just settle.
Just yeah.
Take whatever's left.
That's been told to you.
Like, I have to be careful because I am concerned that, you know, some of the older folks might be trying to trade me or sell me for something, right? When you know, when they have those conversations and they're like, I want to lean in and figure out what's going on. But I think that what happens, right, is the more that you invest in yourself, the better the person who you attract is. And I find that if you're lucky enough to find somebody that you can grow with early on, definitely do that, right? But for where I'm at in life, the people who I deal with and the people that I date are so much better than the person that I would have settled for in my 20s or 30s. It's outrageous, just like the delta in quality. And so when people are like, well, you know, being a CEO and things like that makes you unattractive, it's like, I don't understand, because I'm going to dinner with somebody who has 35,000 employees. Like, that's who I'm seeing. That's who's calling me.
So you don't have a problem?
I don't have a problem when it comes to certain areas of the population.
So you, as far as white, you have a
problem. I think I'm reading the tea leaves.
White men are, that's the dating pool for you.
You know, I think, so here's what I'll notice is like, I would not necessarily say that it's white men. I think you can broaden that. I think that there's
anybody that's not Black.
Right. I think there's and I think Black men of a certain age, because if you've met a Black man that has been married, has kids and is divorced, that is a whole different man than somebody who is just like on the starting lineup somewhere, right? Like, that experience comes with knowledge. And I can't tell you how many guys I sit with that said, I really wish that I would have went with someone like you the first time around. Mm. Because they recognize the value of being able to have somebody who is going to treat your business like their own, who's going to be able to add, who's going to work hard, bring their connections, and then also be able to support you when maybe you can't support the family because you're building.
Do you feel, so we know the vice president, obviously everybody knows her husband is white, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel a disconnect in some levels of having a high level of success and not necessarily finding a Black counterpart, or does that even matter to you?
I'm sure he's out there and he's probably watching this show. right? I don't think that he doesn't exist. He absolutely exists. The question is, have I met him yet? And my, I mean, my line is open. I definitely date black men. I also date men who are not black, and it's all about the best fit. Like, I'm meeting more and more, and you guys could probably lean in on this, because I'm meeting more and more black men who are taking their time and they're building their empires, and they're waiting until they're 35 or 36.
Is it necessary? Is the union necessary?
Or, in what sense?
In a sense where we're meeting a lot of people, not just women, but men are saying, you know what, I don't necessarily want to get married. I don't think it's necessary for me where I'm at.
I mean, I think that that's really like a personal decision. Mm-hmm. I personally would like to be married. That being said, I think that as a culture, we have to have an honest conversation about prenups, right? A prenup is always, it's not always a bad thing. Like, how am I going to take my 60-something employees into my relationship with you and not make sure that they're protected?
Yeah.
Smart.
I just think that those are certain things. But in the same way, like, if you had certain things before I came into the picture, I respect that, you know, maybe you want to make sure that those things are managed in a certain way after we're together. So I think that conversation has to be widened. I also think that a marriage is not always necessary to be in a strong partnership, right? Mm-hmm. It's really about what you want and what you need, but I believe in monogamy. I'm a serial monogamist. I believe in that. That's just how I live. That's just like how I like to roll. Mm-hmm. And I also believe in loyalty. I am very loyal. And those two things, like loyalty and respect, as long as you have it, I feel like you can build and you can grow anything.
How was it working at NASA as far as being a black woman? Did you ever feel any awkwardness or any, you know, level of vibe that was off?
Yeah, I mean, it was not exactly without its challenges, I shall say. But also part of that was just me like learning myself. Like the first 3 years I went in, I didn't really want to be seen as attractive. And so I would get like shirts that are a little bit too big and pants, because I didn't really want to have body or shape. I wanted to just know that whatever ideas and things I had were being received because of who I was. But once I started to push all that to the side, I sort of realized that it is not my job to fix you. It is my responsibility to have the best possible experience and grow from it. And as a result, I joined clubs, I built relationships with people who were not like me, and I had a lot of mentors who, you know, to this day are still people I lean on who are men who have backgrounds that are totally different than me. So some of it truly was me getting out of my own way and just refusing to allow myself to subscribe to what I felt was the status quo at the time.
For sure. So before we leave, what would be your advice to somebody that's, you know, young, trying to figure it out, you know, that might have a similar situation as far as you? What would be your advice as far as your pathway in life?
If you're young, I would say tell the right people your dreams. And the question may be, who are the right people? But it's the individuals who, when you tell them your dreams, they're going to be supportive and they're going to agree to hold you accountable for what it is that you want to achieve. Today, as an adult, I still have a support network. I get up every single day and I work on my mindset. I have affirmations, I pray, I have goals. This success thing, it's a practice, it's a habit, it's something that you execute on a daily. And when you feel like you are weak or you have a automatic negative thought, you need to be able to call your friend and be like, hey, I need you to tell me something good to get me through the day. I think that matters a lot when you're younger, right? Communities. And for the adults out there, right? Like, we're all role models to somebody. If somebody tells you something that's crazy, as long as it doesn't hurt themselves, but if they're like, hey, I want to build the next spaceship to Mars, you tell them they better.
Well, I'm rooting for you. We are rooting for you. It's interesting when you talk about the youth, you know, one of those things when people have future aspirations of what they want to be. It's like, I want to be an astronaut.
Right.
It just seems like the most lofty goal ever that is not attainable. So to see that you are now the person that we can look to, it means a lot. So we are looking forward to supporting you as number six. And we are proud of you. I'll speak for our entire community. Thank you.
Oh, but before we leave, so what does a rocket scientist actually do? What is that job description actually? Because I know what your job description, but like a rocket scientist in totality, what actually is a rocket scientist?
Yeah. And so there's a wide variety, everything from engines to the vehicle, to working on satellites. I talked a little bit about the early days, but I left out that we still, to this day in STEM Board, do a lot with rockets, rocket launches, advisory services, making sure that those things are safe. One of my favorite things, which I cannot wait to talk about later on after it becomes public, is the work that we do to make rockets and satellite launches more accessible.
You do drone work too?
We don't really do any drone work right now, but that's definitely an area that I'm interested in getting into.
Okay.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. How can people follow you on social media or anything else that you would want to leave as far as information for your program, stuff like that?
Yeah. So if you're like an eligible black man, is that what we're doing, right? Like hit me up in the DMs. Listen, DMs, you asked for that.
Shambles.
You asked for that.
Shambles.
Only if you fit the criteria.
Please. NASA qualified.
Yes. Rocket scientist only.
Please.
Listen, we just need ambition. We don't need all that other stuff.
And you got to listen to Illmatic. That's a prerequisite. We're saying it now. That's a fact.
But you can find me on IG at Aisha Bow, all one word. If you're interested in the STEM kits and you want to work with us and do some really good stuff in the community, go directly to stemlingo.com. And if you're interested in the mission to space, you can catch some fun photos of me, an astronaut jumper, on aishabow.com.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for rocking with us. See you next week.
Peace.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.